Welcome, I'm Tracy Springberry. And everybody is welcome here, including people who make mistakes. And so you are welcome here if this is your first time or you've been coming for 50 years. You're welcome no matter who you love, no matter what your gender is, no matter the color of your skin or your immigration status. You're welcome if you're just flourishing in all the bright colors of the earth, showing all her joy and pleasure. And you're welcome here if your heart is heavy, and it's hard to even notice that. Everyone is welcome, no matter who you are and how you feel. And so I have a couple of announcements. One, I really want to welcome everybody online as well. You are welcome here, whether you're watching it on video or you're watching it live. And we're going to have coffee downstairs and online after the service. And I just want to wish everyone a happy Mother's Day. And I just want to make sure that newcomers know that there's a little piece of paper in front of your chairs for you to fill out. And that's how you can get all the information about what's going on here during the week. And that's for everybody else, too. You get an e-blast. You get the order of service on Sunday. That all have information about what's happening here during the week, which is actually quite a lot of stuff. So, welcome. And now I would like everybody to greet one another. And your question this morning to answer with everybody is if you could imagine one thing you would like to be true about our world in 50 years, what would that be? Like to invite Isaac up to light our chalice this morning. And our chalice lighting words are from Albert Schweitzer. At times our own light goes out and is rekindled by the spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us. Let us say our affirmation together. Open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to know what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love ourselves and our neighbors.
Good morning again. Is this mic on? I'm Salima Mawson. My pronouns are she and her. And it is my joy to serve as your lay leader this morning. Our opening reading is a poem by Robert Bly called Things to Think. Think in ways you've never thought before. If the phone rings, think of it as carrying a message larger than anything you've ever heard, vaster than 100 lines of Yeats. Think that someone may bring a bear to your door. Maybe wounded and damaged and deranged. Or think that a moose has risen out of the lake and he's carrying on his antlers a child of yours whom you have never met. When someone knocks on the door, think that he is about to give you something large that you will be forgiven, or that it's not necessary to work all the time, or that it's been decided that if you lie down, no one will die. Obviously, I need my glasses more than I thought I did. And now for our imaginations and for forgiveness and rest and cell phones and bears and moose and children, maybe especially for children, let us be grateful. Let us, as is our custom here at WOOF, to take the next few minutes to consider what it is that we have to be grateful for. It's a warm spring Sunday morning, and it's been quite a week. So let's take a minute to think about now how giving and gratitude go hand in hand, and how generosity of spirit is what keeps us going as the beloved community that we are becoming. The poet Alberto Reyes reminds us that when we give, it is always hand to hand and not in equal measure. He says, "You gave me blue and I gave you yellow. Together we make simple green. Together we make something greater than the difference." So as our offering baskets are passed this morning, whether you place anything in it or not, know that we are grateful for the gift of your presence and everything that you are. If the hosts will come forward. This morning, let us speak together our affirmation of gratitude and giving.
Let us be grateful for we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. Let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we can learn from the generosity of others.
I would like to invite up any children. We have some seats up here for children who would like to sit up here. So our story this morning is The Other Side by Jacqueline Woodson. That summer, the fence that stretched between our town seemed bigger. We lived in a yellow house on the other side of it. White people lived on the other side. And Mama said, "Don't climb over that fence when you play." She said it wasn't safe. That summer, there was a girl who wore a pink sweater. Each morning, she climbed up the fence and stared over at our side. Sometimes I stared back. She never sat on the fence with anybody. That girl didn't. Once when we were jumping rope, she asked if she could play. And my friend Sandra said no, without even asking the rest of us. I don't know what I would have said. Maybe yes, maybe no. How do you think they feel? That summer, everything and everyone on the other side of the fence seemed far away. I asked my mama why, and she said, "Because that's way have every things have always been." Sometimes when my mama and I went to town, I saw that girl with her mama. She looked sad. Sometimes that girl did. "Don't stare," my mama said. "It's not polite." Mama wouldn't let me go out in the rain. "That's why I bought you rainy day toys," my mama said. "You stay inside here where it's warm and safe and dry." But every time it rained, I looked for that girl, and I always found her somewhere near the fence. It rained a lot that summer. On rainy days, that girl sat on the fence in a raincoat. She let herself get all wet and acted like she didn't even care. Sometimes I saw her dancing around in puddles, splashing and laughing. I got close to the fence, and the girl asked me my name. "Clover," I said. "My name is Annie," she said. "Annie Paul. I live over yonder by where you see the laundry. That's my blouse hanging on the line." She smiled. She had a pretty smile. And then I smiled. We smiled at each other. "It's nice up on the fence," said Annie. "You can see all over." I ran my hands along the fence. I reached up and touched the top of it. "A fence like this was made for sitting on," Annie said. She looked at me sideways. "My mama says I shouldn't go on the other side." My mama says the same thing, but she never says anything about sitting on it. Neither did mine. Some mornings my mama watched us. I waited for her to tell me to get down from that fence before I break my neck or something. But she never did. "I see you made a new friend," she said one morning, and I nodded, and Mama smiled. That summer, Annie and I sat on that fence and watched the whole world around us. That summer, me and Annie sat together on the fence, and when Sandra and the others looked at me funny, I just made believe I didn't care. Someplace in the middle of the summer, the rain stopped. When I walked outside, the grass was damp and the sun was already high up in the sky. And I stood there with my hands up in the air. I felt brave that day. I felt free. One day, Sandra and them were jumping rope near the fence and we asked if we could play. "I don't care," Sandra said. And when we jumped, Sandra and me were partners, the way we used to be. When we were too tired to jump anymore, we sat up on that fence, all of us in a long line. Someday somebody's gonna come along and knock this old fence down, Annie said. And I nodded, yeah, someday. And that is our story. Let's sing our children out. Now is time for joys and sorrows. The world is so sweet and so wonderful, with the joy of children and flowers, with the joy of this community. And sometimes the world is really hard. Our hearts break, we are betrayed, our bodies hurt and ache. There's unexpected illnesses and accidents. And in this community, we try to hold that contradiction of human life, celebrating with each other when things are glad, and holding each other in love when things are hard. And today we will come up and drop stones in the water for your joy or your sorrow. And you're welcome to speak a sentence or so about your joy and sorrow, or you're welcome to just drop a stone in silence. So you may come forward, go down this aisle, and come up this aisle to drop your stones.
Thank you for being part of our community. We've missed you and are glad to be back.
Gloria and my grandmother Leah. I have two stones. One is of immense joy for the women's retreat we had last weekend. It was absolutely wonderful. And in that joy, I also include my mom, Nora. And this one is for hope. My children are estranged, and I just will never give up hope that they'll come back to me.
Share. My name's Anand, and I'm so thankful for this journey. I've had the most difficult week of my life.
I'm thankful for rhododendrons.
Thank you. I spent last month in Kenya, and the story this morning was so apropos. And I was able to tell school children that even though my skin was what they call white and theirs were brown, we are all inside the same.
I just want to be, or just want to share how grateful I am to everyone here who made my time away not feel scary. And also your continued good thoughts for Harper would be appreciated. Good pleasure.
You would have loved my mom. Her name was Phyllis, and she was so much fun, and she died on her 85th birthday.
This is for Eleanor. She is very humble, but she's been an amazing artist for decades, and she's finally sharing her art this year with the wider community. I'm so proud of her.
So I would like to place a stone for my grandmothers and great-grandmothers who could have never imagined my life. And I would like to drop another stone for the pain, the extreme pain, in being inflicted on the people of Gaza. It is now time for our meditation, reflection, and prayer, as is your tradition. And these words are adapted from the Reverend Bove Kemper. So in this congregation, we make space for the complexities of life, as we just did, especially so on this day, Mother's Day, invented to honor women who nurture. And today we honor particularly the complexities of mothering and being mothered, honoring the truth of this day in each of our hearts. There is room for all of our experiences. If you have carried a child or children, whether or not they came to be born, we see you. If you have fervently wished to do so and circumstances of fate made it impossible to be a mother, we see you. If you love children we cannot see, whether because of death or estrangement, we see you. If you never wanted to be a mother, we see you. If you are happy to mother other people's children as an educator, as an auntie, or foster parent, we see you. If your mother hurts you, physically or emotionally, we see you. If your mother is or was your best friend, we see you. If your gender says you are not a mother, and yet you take on the role of nurturer, we see you. If you're wondering whether your mothering has been good enough, we see you. And if yours is a different truth altogether, we honor your unspoken story. There is room for all in this circle. May it be so today, and may it be so always. Let's have a moment of silence.
Who we are, born each other, born a morning star rises and sings to the universe. Who
Our next reading is from Andrea Gibson. I know I'm not the only one whose mind... I know I'm not the only one whose mind wants to trap them right now. The weight of everything, personal struggles, a world in pain, the fear that nothing will ever change, can make it hard to breathe. But I believe that there is another way, that loosening our grip on what we think we know will be exactly what saves us. Not just as individuals, but collectively. Not just as individuals, but collectively. Imagination isn't an escape. It's an act of liberation. A door flung open to something wildly new. The freer we become inside ourselves, the freer our world will be. Songwriter and author Nick Cave, who says, "What we think, do, and say is fundamental to the survival of this grand human project. Each of us precious, and our actions are vital. Everything we do and say matters. We can speak beauty into the world or poison it with our words. We can build things up or tear them down.
We can dream of a world that is vast, alive, and interesting. Or we can resist it and make it small, hard, and empty. The Irish poet, priest, and philosopher John O'Donohue said, "We are each an artist. We each possess an imagination. Everyone, whether they like it or not, is involved in the construction of this world. Every action we take and every word we speak builds or breaks the planet. We must approach the world as collaborators and willing participants in its preservation."
Did you know that our imagination can heal us? Our theme this month is imagination, and last week I talked about how imagination is one of the gifts of being human and allows us to create possibilities in our lives and communities. But how could it be possible that our imagination could heal us? Most of us have been raised to believe that the body, mind, heart, and spirit are all disconnected. Our minds think what they think, and our bodies does what it does. And when we are sick or hurt, that is addressed by healing the physical body. Medical doctors are taught in medical school to prescribe medication and do physical procedures to our bodies. Medical professions would never suggest that we heal our bodies with our minds, nor would most of us, I suspect. Still, in one experiment, doctors said to patients who were about to have abdominal surgery, "You know, when you wake up from your surgery, you might be surprised to find that you're thinking about some of your favorite foods and how it looks and how it might smell, and that your stomach may begin to churn and growl and make noises." And in these patients, there was a 50% reduction in the post-abdominal surgery complication where the bowel doesn't start up again. This is a very serious condition with few treatment options. Then, with a less than 1 minute imaginative prompt, the complication dropped in half. An insurance company had patients before surgery listen to a 15-minute guided meditation, and they discovered that those surgeries cost about $800 less on average. Doctors have discovered if they have patients imagine their bodies moving blood away from the surgery site before a surgery, it decreases blood loss by 40%. And then when patients do a relaxation meditation before surgery, the surgeries take less time. What seems to be actually true is that our imagination can change our physical body. In a study, the majority of participants who imagined smelling and tasting a lemon secreted saliva that breaks down sour things. And if they imagined an orange, the saliva that breaks down sweet things came out. The imagination has been shown to increase cells in our immune system, thus improving its effectiveness. The placebo effect demonstrates another way imagination has an direct effect on healing. In most clinical trials for new drugs, the placebo effect is about 30%. When both a doctor and their patient truly believe the patient is receiving medication that will be effective in decreasing their pain, the placebo effect can be up to 70%. This is because the body seems to start the healing process that the mind believes is going to happen. When a person and their doctor believe a pain pill will stop pain, and instead the patient is given a sugar pill, the brain still begins to produce its version of morphine. Unfortunately, this doesn't work with diseases like cancer or ailments like broken arms, but it does with many others. Depression, pain, irritable bowel syndrome, sleep disorders, and perhaps diabetes and some heart conditions. In many societies over millennia, healers used rituals, talking to spirits, and other processes that engage the mind, the heart, particularly emotions, and body, as well as herbs to heal people. Westerners have often scoffed at such practices as superstitions by the uneducated. But in fact, these symbolic methods directed to the imaginative parts of the human brain in many cases will produce the necessary changes in the human body to heal it. People just really need to believe that it's going to happen. One wonders why the scientific community does not study these types of interventions more thoroughly and attempt to create practical applications so we could move away from the often harsh and expensive drugs and surgeries we use now. However, healing with imagination is far outside the paradigm of how our bodies work and are considered by most to be woo-woo. I mean, seriously, we can improve surgery outcomes with imaginative prompts and guided meditations. It literally seems too hard to believe. And most, not all, but most medical professionals would laugh their colleagues out of the room or find fault with any study methods that came to such a conclusion. It just doesn't fit into the story we tell about how things work. And while government funding has, until very, very recently, funded basic research on disease mechanism, 75% of all clinical trials are paid for by corporations, mostly pharmaceutical companies. Not a lot of profit in working to increase the placebo effect or use other suggestive, imaginative healing methods. Sometimes it happens by accident, though. It turns out that phenylephrine, which I practiced saying many times, but imagined earlier in the sermon that I wouldn't pull it off, so there you are. It's a commonly used decongestant, but they discovered a few years ago that it never actually worked. But it turns out that for many, many people, it actually did work. It also turns out that it did for, this one's easy, Tamiflu. People reported it absolutely reduced their flu symptoms. But later on, it was discovered it simply did not affect our bodies in any way. Personally, I would love to believe that some ritual or action or super cheap sugar pill was enough to make my allergies go away. It turns out allergies do sometimes respond to the placebo effect. But developing something like that would be pretty hard to do. I can't imagine believing in anything enough besides pills and medication to get my body to do anything. But still, I've decided the next time I have a medical procedure, I'm definitely doing a relaxation meditation before it happens. Imagination is so powerful, and connecting our mind and bodies, that it is used by top athletes to improve their performance. They imagine themselves doing their sport perfectly as part of the practice. And in one study, they divided basketball players in half, and one half practiced for 30 minutes practicing free throws. And the other half just imagined practicing the free throws perfectly. And the group that imagined did 30% better than the group that practiced. MRIs actually show that when we do something and we imagine doing it, the same parts of our brains light up. There is simply no difference. So when we imagine doing something perfectly, we are literally more likely to be able to do it that way. Imagination is also one tool for dealing with trauma. Trauma is a reaction to really terrible events, events that are life-threatening, where we feel out of control. Trauma can happen to those in wars, people who are starving to death, abuse survivors, as well as in accidents and natural disasters. And I use the word can in all these cases because the exact same thing can happen to two people, and one might experience a trauma response and one might not. And while there's some theories about why that's true, no one really knows exactly why that's true. Trauma is a whole body response to an event that smashes time together. So a person gets stuck in their minds, in bodies, as if that trauma is still happening. Trauma actually changes our brains and how a person experiences and perceives the world. So perhaps one becomes distant or suspicious and gets angry quickly or doesn't trust themselves or other people or becomes addicted or depressed or gets sick. There are so many different responses to trauma. One thing, however, is that trauma seems to stop imagination. It shuts down possibilities and it constricts lives. Often, even usually, it's unconscious. We come to believe that it's not our minds and bodies going into hyper alert or shutting down, but these reactions are caused by the people and events around them, us. If only they were different, we wouldn't jump into this intense response. However, those dealing with trauma can learn to stretch their imaginations by doing expressive art, reading fiction, thinking up possibilities that seem utterly impossible and playing with them in their minds, doing guided meditations and other similar practices. But here's the thing. Many of us, whether we have trauma or not, can find our lives constricted. And we can struggle to imagine new ways of being or find the ways we would like to be impossible to achieve. Perhaps we'd really like to try something we've never done before or do the thing we always wanted to do but are worried we will embarrass ourselves. Or we want to speak our truth in a firm but kind way, but knowing the other person is probably going to get really upset. Or we want to expand our heart to love someone we find difficult. And we just find all of this impossible for us to do. The gift of imagination is we can create images of ourselves doing the hard thing while we're completely safe. What would doing this thing be like if we did it well? We can see ourselves doing it. And what would happen if it was super uncomfortable are really embarrassing, or we failed, or someone got tremendously upset, what might we do then? We can imagine the responses we would like to make. We can imagine ourselves as confident, grounded, worthy, and kind to ourselves and the other people involved, no matter what happens. And by imagining, we let our mind and body practice. We let them start making the changes we want in our head, in our hormonal systems, in our nervous systems. Just in the same way the brain will make more immune system cells when we create images of them doing so. Think the things you never thought before. Wonderful things, crazy things, things that matter, as Robert Bly suggested in this morning's reading. Think in ways you've never thought before. If the phone rings, think of it carrying a message larger than anything you've ever heard. We can also imagine the world we dream of. John Lennon imagined the world he dreamed of, where everyone lives in peace without greed or hunger. And we've been singing his song over and over for 50 years, reminding ourselves that it is what we want so we can have the energy to actually make that world exist. But most of the time we get trapped in stories we've been taught are true about how things work, and we live out those stories. Because that's what we do as human beings. We act out the stories that we are told. A famous quote says, "It is easier to imagine the end of the world than the end of capitalism." We've been taught that capitalism is the highest form of civilization, the natural direction of human development since we lived together in tribes. And look at all we've created, all the comfort, all the stuff, the story goes. No matter that capitalism was funded on the idea that the greed of property owners will provide sustenance for everyone. No matter it never did, because wealth requires labor to work for wages that often barely sustain their lives. It began with slaves, then shifted to Americans who worked in factories on wages just enough not to starve. And now it depends on prison labor and workers in other countries who live with wages that keep them just above starving. No matter that mental illness, autoimmune diseases, and addiction are skyrocketing in the Western world. And now today, the wealthy have just given up pretending that they have any goal but more wealth, power, and control. Still, that idea that capitalism is the best way to organize our society traps our mind. It is like the story we tell that our mind and body are separate. And when we are ill, the only thing we do is treat the body. Even with preliminary scientific evidence that the imagination can heal the body, most of us still struggle to believe that. That's how strong the story is. That the current economic structure is the best way to do things is also a very strong story. As Andrea Gibson said in another of this morning's readings, "I know I'm not the only one whose mind wants to trap them right now. The weight of everything, personal struggles, a world in pain, the fear that nothing will ever change, can make it hard to breathe." However, if the mind can create chemicals that heal pain just because it believes pain relief has happened, is on the way, we too can imagine a new way to organize ourselves as human beings. And after that, we can make it come true. We don't have to believe the story that there are only two possible economic systems, authoritarian communism and capitalism, which most Americans absolutely believe. Gibson continues, "But I believe there is another way, that loosening our grip on what we think we know will be exactly what saves us, not just as individuals, but collectively. Imagination is not an escape. It's an act of liberation, a door flung open to something wildly new. The freer we become inside ourselves, the freer our world will be." The basic foundations of the United States are crumbling. Crumbling is kind of a mild word, in fact. It is horrifying and hurtful and will undoubtedly get much worse. But this is also an opportunity. From the destruction, we can create something entirely new. But unless we imagine it, it is simply impossible. The children on the fence in today's story imagined a world where the fence did not exist. And we know that other people did too. And eventually, legal segregation ended. We are each an artist, wrote the poet, priest, and philosopher John O'Donohue. We each possess an imagination. Everyone, whether they like it or not, is involved in the construction of the world. Right now, we are called to use the power of imagination to construct the world we dream about. Whether that is the health of our bodies, or the care of our communities, whether that is the first step to grow our communities, or care for the poor, or link arms with the oppressed. Our faith asks us to let our imaginations do its work and dream of a world that now seems impossible, like my grandmother's and great-grandmothers could have never imagined me standing here talking to you. Where we can dream a world where instead of greed, we center love. We are asked to answer the call to love, which we will now sing.
The truth to be found. We are answered.
expressions of grace in every embrace, fulfilling the vision divine. We are answering the call of love. Hands joined together as hearts meet as one, emboldened by faith, we dare to proclaim we are answering the call.
Let us go into the world imagining the wonder that we can create. I extinguish this flame, but not, I don't do it. Salima extinguishes this flame, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they stay with all of you until we meet again. So the front can face the back and the back the front, and we will sing our final hymn, Carry the Flame.